through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Good Monday to everybody. Welcome into our humble program. You know, as I've said many times, I feel it's the duty of this show in particular to be fun and to be interesting. Like, those are, if we do both of those things every day, I come away feeling good. I think Jake and Stacy probably agree with me on that.
Definitely.
And I woke up this morning and ESPN was on my TV. It was First Take. And I wasn't listening, but I was watching. And every topic that I saw come up on the graphics bar seemed to be one that was, like, not depressing, but just serious. Right? There was the Jimmy Butler was lambasted by the NBA because he wore a jersey without a name on it. Now, that's a controversy. Antonio Brown, where will he end up? We've been through that a million times. And now there's this topic with Pac-12 players. They sent a letter in to the Players Tribune where they addressed a lot of issues that they had, essentially saying that they're ready to opt out if certain conditions are not met. And we'll go through what they are in a minute. But this is, you know, this is another one of those serious, not fun topics that just needs to be dealt with. And we need to talk about it. We just do. I mean, we live in Pac-12 land, and there's a local tie-in to this, which we'll get to as well with Washington State. But we got to do it. We just do. So we'll do our best to make this fun and interesting, even though I don't really look at this as a particularly fun topic. We'll catch up with Mike Sauk at 12:30, a little Mariner baseball, 12:45. Pete Carroll speaking at 1, so you definitely want to hang around for that. Okay, Pac-12, I'll call them issues. Here you, I guess I'll start with their list of demands. Pac-12 players threatening to opt out if certain demands are not met. Now, one has to do with COVID and health concerns and whether or not the Pac-12 and the NCAA are being fully transparent with what they know about this. There's issues of medical coverage, testing, etc., that the players evidently are not comfortable with. So that's one aspect of it. The others have to do with revenue sharing, being paid for likenesses, things like that. There's also, you know, excessive pay to people like the commissioner, to coaches. So we've got money. We've got mainly financial issues and COVID issues. I think it kind of boils down to that. There's a bunch of other things, but I think the main things are financial and medical. So players not real thrilled with the current situation. There's also things like social justice, racial injustice, the way certain black players have been treated. That's also very important. But these things to me seem kind of unrelated. And if you picture a bargaining table between the players and the Pac-12, these would be three very difficult issues to sort out, in my opinion. But I'm going to turn it over to Stacy here because I know that she has very defined opinions on such issues. So go ahead, Stacy.
Oh, well, you know, this is one of those few areas, I think, where Jake and I disagree. I will start by saying that both Jake and I support athletes getting paid at the very least by the use of their names, images, and likeness. I know Jake feels passionately about this as a former athlete himself, and so I completely respect that background and where he comes from with that history. For me, I think the biggest critique I've seen about this has been the players' demand for 50% of each sport's total conference revenue to be distributed evenly among athletes in their respective sports. So that's really the demand and the sticking point that I see for a lot of people out there. And there are two arguments I hear against it. One is just the typical kind of, you know, athletes shouldn't be paid in general, to which I say they should, period. That's where I stand on that. and that the schools have been making 100% of that. So, you know, you've been making 100% of the income for however many years. And yeah, 50% might be a lot to jump into, but it's a starting point. It's something to start at, and it's a bigger conversation that needs to happen in general. The second argument I see against that is that men's basketball and football support all of these other sports because of Title IX, and I think that the non-revenue sports, I don't want to see those sports cut. But at the same time, I think it's unfair to put the responsibility of funding those sports on the backs of the athletes that are playing football and basketball. It's almost like a weird kind of guilt that they have to deal with. If I ask for more money, if I try to make radical change, then I have to have my friends who are tennis players or swimmers or golfers or whatever lose their scholarships and lose their sports. And I think that we need to readjust the burden that we place on athletes in the revenue sports to where they don't have to support those people all the time. I think that it's an unfair burden, particularly when guys like Dabo Swinney, your $9 million salary could support a tennis program. You know what I mean? Like the salary we are paying some of these just football coaches are enough to keep those programs afloat or to at least lessen the burden.
Yeah, this was really interesting, and it was really conflicting for me, Stacey and Tom, because I was sitting here last night and two nights ago as this was all developing and this conversation was starting to leak out. And at first, it was about COVID, right? It was about COVID. It was about college players wanting better protection, them not feeling comfortable being forced to sign liability waivers to even participate, them forcing college programs to be transparent about who's testing positive for COVID-19. Because not all college programs are transparent, and nor are they in regards to injuries as well. There's oftentimes, and I've seen it, where coaches pinpoint a player as being weak, as being someone who is holding back when they have legitimate injuries that they're trying to force them to play through. So I get all that. I was on board with all of that. But then all of a sudden the conversation started to change. And I fully disagree with the players using a pandemic, using COVID-19 to attempt to make universities give in to their unrealistic demands of financial compensation, right? And Tom, you had mentioned, you know, these three or four different areas that, you know, the players or five areas that they are concerned about. It's four. Health and safety, mm-hmm. Protect all sports, end racial injustice, economic freedom and equity. Those are all really, I think, important issues that should be addressed, but those are all issues that can't be addressed all at one time here in the next month or two to realistically give a season. And then they're going to say, well, if you don't mean it, then I'm going to opt out. I'm going to take the COVID opt out. Wait a second. I don't think that these players fully understand how college athletics works, the function of it, and also sitting here saying, well, you could just take money from the university's endowment. That endowment doesn't go towards college athletics. It goes to the entire university. Now you're talking about the entire student body, research, everything else that goes along with that university. I think that they have overshot the moon here, and I don't know exactly what they're trying to get out of this, what they expect to get out of this, because it really feels like if you don't meet my demands, then I'm walking out of here. And so I just really don't understand how they're going to actually get what they're looking for here.
I think sometimes, and I'm looking at this from the player's point of view, I mean, the question really here is, are they going about it the right way? Jake says no. I think Stacey says yes.
I'm saying why not this way, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think sometimes to get the ball rolling, it's okay to make a symbolic gesture, even if your intention isn't necessarily to follow all the way through with it. And say Larry Scott comes back and says, look, we'll help you with the COVID thing, but as far as all this other stuff, we can't deal with that right now. We can't fix all this in a month. The players may know that, but they're just trying to make a stink about it right now to get the ball rolling and to get it in people's consciousness, to bring awareness to it. And then they'll go forward and they'll play or whatever. If that's their intention, then okay. But I agree with Jake that it, at least as far on its surface, if you read through this letter in the Players' Tribune, it appears that they're using COVID as a smokescreen to get all these other things. By the way, I support players being paid too, in some sense. I don't agree with pulling from the endowment either, but just principally, I agree with that. I don't think that this is the right way to go about that, saying, okay, well, if you don't give us that, we're going to opt out because of COVID.
See,
it kind of goes back to what Stacey and I were talking about on Friday with George Kittle, mm-hmm. right? He could take the COVID opt out if the 49ers tell him that they're going to pay him as a tight end and not as the seventh best player in the league, mm-hmm. right? It's a similar thing. It's like, all right, well, I'm going to use this. That's not cool.
I think that the athletes are doing it differently, though, Tom. I get where you're coming from, and I briefly thought about the George Kittle argument when I was wondering, like, oh, what's Tom going to say for this one? I know that we both agreed there. But I think the difference is that with college athletics, it's completely fine to use COVID as either an excuse or as the foundation of your argument, because it's highlighting exactly what the issues are, which is that maybe some schools might not have students report. Well, if I'm a student, which is your reason that I can't, get paid or whatever, then why am I reporting? I'm not a student. I don't feel like a student when I'm reporting and other students aren't supposed to. I feel like an employee, you know? And if I'm an employee, fine. I have to follow the rules. But when you are not following the rules in a pandemic and in COVID that other students have to follow, like staying off campus or doing virtual classes, then it's really hard for schools to make the argument that you're a student first and an athlete second.
But what does that have to do with revenue splitting?
Well, I think this is them including that as part of the conversation. So COVID is exacerbating. I agree with Lydia Cruz on this one. COVID is exacerbating all of the issues that already exist. And it's fine to use that as the underlying thing because you're being treated differently than other students. And there's a kind of universal conversation that we're having about it. And maybe a universal fear that we all have where someone can say, yeah, I'm nervous about going into my job too. I kind of get why they feel this way. I think that asking for revenue is a way to toss that in there as part of a conversation that needs to happen. And whether or not, Jake, it's shooting for the moon, what I'll say is that a former student athlete, Ed O'Bannon, started his case against the NCAA in 2009. That didn't end up going to the Supreme Court, but it's 11 years later, and the NCAA this past year has only just agreed to allow students to profit from their names, images, and likeness. That took a decade to get done. So I think pushing for compensation in a more radical way, even if it's not possible this year, at least forces the issue and speeds that up a little bit more.
It could, but there will never be a 50-50 revenue split. The NFL players don't even get a 50-50 revenue split. And those are the things that in this fair market, I am fully for the players. Name, image, and likeness, rights and representation. I think that that's a massive win for college athletes because now you have opportunities to get paid. The problem in all of this is college athletes in general, as a group, not the star players, but as a group, overvalue their worth in terms of what they actually bring to the table. Not every player out of 90 guys that are getting scholarships to universities make the university big time money. Not every player has that same sort of weight. And so what ends up happening, if you're talking about making this a business-like model, is you're going to see a lot of these players, the difference between the players at the bottom and the top are only going to increase. That's what's going to happen. Plus, you're going to cut other sports. You're going to cut other things that made college athletics great. I can't believe I'm on this side of the table because I am for athletes sticking up for themselves. I'm for college athletes wanting more. But this, to me, is just going too far and being unrealistic. What are they going to be able to get out of this? That's the question I think need to be asked. What are they going to get out? Because they're forcing that if you don't meet our demands, we're going to opt out. How realistic are any of these demands in terms of actually being put forth this year, implemented now? Because as right now, Stacey, they're saying if they don't do this, we're opting out. So that's my big question of it all. You're going to have a lot of players opting out, and I don't know where they think they're going to be at, because I think college athletics is one of those things that they can move on from guys very quickly.
I'm going to go ahead and say that if they get just a little more transparency with COVID, that might be enough to make some of these players go ahead and not opt out and wait on the other things. That's just my gut feeling, because that is a very immediate concern. The other stuff can wait. If they want to bring awareness to it, like I just said, I think that that's fine. But there's no way that they're going to get a 50-50 split in a month. I mean, it's just not going to happen. All right, there's a local tie into this, like I said, with the Cougs. I want to get to that right now in three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
There was a story that broke yesterday, and the way that it broke I thought was just ridiculous. It made Coug coach Nick Rolovich look like a complete jerk. The story essentially said Rolovich dismisses Cassidy Woods because he is with the hashtag We Are United movement. The We Are United movement is what we were just talking about with the letter to the players, or in the Players Tribune. That's the name of the movement. Basically, what's going on is that there was a taped conversation, one that the player, Cassidy Woods, taped with the coach, Nick Rolovich, where Nick Rolovich said, hey, if you want to opt out because of COVID, that's one thing. But if it's because of We Are United, that's going to be a problem, and that may have scholarship implications, right? So what do you guys make of Rolovich's response saying that, hey, COVID's one thing, but if you're opting out because of We Are United, it's another? Jake?
Well, I think automatically people put this as, well, Nick Rolovich is racist or something. I don't see it that way. If you are opting out of COVID, there is protection involved in that. If you are freely opting out of the season because you are protesting for these X amount of rights, this isn't a utopia. If you decide you want to sit out to protest, then yes, you are in jeopardy of losing your scholarship. You can't be a scholarship player who refuses to play football. I'm sorry. Unless you have a medical reason as to why you're going to sit out, then you fall under that line in that, and being in jeopardy of that. And if you're willing to sacrifice that, then great. But don't sit there and say, well, I refuse to play football, but then on one end, surprised that your scholarship is then going to be taken away. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, this didn't really align with everything that we'd heard about Rolovich leading up to this call. I wonder if he's just in between a rock and a hard place, where on the one hand, he's got a player who medically is going to opt out, and so he's going to tell him, hey, you're released from the team. And on the other hand, as a head coach, you can't have a player with the program if he wants to be paid or is publicly opposing you or whatever. Like, is it Rolovich's decision, or is it something that he's required to do because those are just the terms of this kid's scholarship with the school?
The latter.
So I'm curious to see kind of what more goes into this, because everything else we've heard about Rolovich is that he is a great guy, and not even having had a season there and having seen what he looks like with those kids, I'm hesitant to just write him off. I need to hear more about this.
Thus the shame of breaking news and everybody just jumping to conclusions, right? I mean, in this day and age, I would be shocked if any AD hired a coach without vetting the situation and seeing where he stands on all of these different issues. Like, hey, if a player wants to, you know, raise his hand, take a knee, wants to do this or that, you know, how are you going to react to that? Coaching is different than it used to be. I'd be shocked if Pat Chun brought in a guy who was just an old school tyrant and said, my way or the highway.
For sure. But saying that it's different than it used to be is kind of the key point, right? Because I can understand why the concern is there, because stuff like that does happen and used to happen all the time.
Next.
Number two.
Guess who's buying the XFL, people? Dwayne.
What the XFL is cooking.
That would be the voice of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. $15 million to buy the XFL. Here's my question. Oof. Do you guys think The Rock will take this venture seriously enough to actually sustain the league for a while? Stacey?
I think so. You have to admit this. Whatever your perception of Dwayne The Rock Johnson is, this guy is a business dude. He has stayed relevant. He's stayed making money. He's involved in 1,000,005 ventures. Like, this guy knows how to keep a business and keep himself afloat. So I'm going to say yes. At the end of the day, like, he knows what his brand is and he cares about it.
Yeah, I you don't take something on like this if you're The Rock, if you're not willing to be a part of this. And you know, in The Rock's statement, part of his statement was saying, I am excited to use my callous hands to, you know, better this league, essentially. And that's what The Rock has been about. That's what his brand has been about. If you just follow him on social media, it's about being the hardest worker in the room, not getting outworked, and being willing to do whatever it takes to make things happen. He did that in his acting career. He's done that in a lot of ventures that he's been a part of, and I think The Rock will be very closely invested into the XFL. And if you think about this right now, think about the conversation that we are having amongst college athletes. What was the purpose, the original purpose of the XFL under Vince McMahon and Oliver Luck? Their goal was, yes, to get pro athletes and create a new league, but their other goal was to give an avenue for college athletes that wanted to make money, that wanted to go into a more professional world. This was their leverage and opportunity to do so. So maybe, just maybe, Vince McMahon sold this thing a little too early, and The Rock is picking this up at the right time, because if you're seeing this We Are United movement amongst college athletes, how many of those athletes do you think are then going to jump ship when those demands aren't met and they go play for the XFL? I'd be willing to bet quite a few would be willing to go do that. So this could be an opportune time for The Rock to be purchasing the XFL.
I'll give you another guy who was very brand conscious, very hardworking, and also a lot wealthier than The Rock. Vince McMahon. He started this thing up, and the second things went south, he bailed out.
He's a different dude. He is.
I think that, look, I just don't, look, like you said, Stacey, The Rock's involved in 1,000,500 things. He's an actor. I think that he wants to get his name involved in something like this. I don't think that, look, it may not come down to him taking it seriously. It may just come down to hit this league not being able to be kept afloat by anybody. So the decision will be made for him. But I have serious doubts about how seriously he will take this. Because in order to make a competing football league work, you need to dedicate all of your attention, all of it, to making this work. I don't think The Rock has the time. All right, my next question was going to be, what do we expect to hear from Pete Carroll today? Maybe we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. Up next, though, Mike Sauk is in the house. Definitely want to ask him about this Pac-12 We Are United story. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
1-2 here to Simeon, right-hand hitter. Pitch, swing on and miss. Struck him out. Fastball running away from him at 96. That's 9 strikeouts for Kikuchi. His career best is 10. And he is looking good tonight, trying to pitch his way out of trouble.
You say Kikuchi did that? What?
Wait.
Man, of every guy in the starting rotation, that was the guy who I had some serious doubts about. We're going to get to Mike Sauk coming up at 12:45. Little schedule change there. So we'll talk some Mariners right now. Not the best weekend in terms of results, but I don't know. Stacey and I went through the good, the bad, and the ugly on Friday. And some of it remained the same. Some of it changed. I think, guys, we can say that the starting pitching, like our mantra all last week was what?
Get past the fourth. Jake trailing is my favorite part. They did.
Yeah, I know. Poor guys on
Walker got, did he get through the seventh or into the seventh?
He got through seven.
He got through seven.
Through seven.
Man,
yeah,
that was a exactly. great Let's outing go. By him. Scoreless. What was it? One hit, scoreless through seven. Unreal.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Unreal. Walker, Kikuchi, Gonzalez, Graveman, all pretty good. I mean, varying, but pretty good. Bullpen shaky. Bats went to sleep. And I think the main point I want to bring up right now is just that Kyle Lewis seems to be the main attraction on this team right now. That won't be the case in the future, hopefully. But I think we're learning that you can't ride him every single game. He's got three home runs. He's definitely proving himself as a major league player and somebody that we can latch on to as Mariner fans. But he can't be the whole show every single night, especially when you're going up against teams who are going to score more than just two runs. So after yesterday's game, I tweeted that I was kind of mad for the first time because it looked like they might actually come back and win yesterday's game. They made it 3-2, and then Seager had kind of a long at bat, but then ended up striking out, and Nola was flailing away for the final out. I was kind of miffed about that. But guys, did you feel any better, worse, the same? What'd you think, Jake?
To me, I think I feel the same in you know over the weekend. But one of the things that really stepped up, or I guess that was different, was the pitching, obviously. And Ryland Roland-Smith, we had him on last week, and he kind of talked about, hey guys, you know, the first time that these pitchers are out there, you kind of have to give them a pass. And he was right, because they obviously needed to get themselves out there. They needed to get their feet wet and back into the rhythm of things. And the next time that that rotation came around, that it was sure a massive improvement, as you saw Marco and you saw the rest of the group follow after that. I thought that that was tremendous. And now let's see what the back end of this rotation could do with Justin Sheffield and Justin Dunn. Can they finish out that rotation the second time around and really, you know, come out strong? That's my hope.
Yeah, Graveman struggled a little bit. It wasn't awful, but there's a little bit of a struggle there. But I thought it was great to see that, you know, 1-2-3, that the start of your rotation did not just like a 180 from their first appearances, but were really, really good, really encouraging. These are guys that you want for your organization in the future, and some of the best outings by them I've seen a long time. So that was really encouraging. I said on Friday, Tom, when we talked about it, that Tim Lopes was someone who was really encouraging to me. I thought he still looked fine. I mean, the offense disappeared a little bit toward particularly yesterday, but it was still great to see Kyle Lewis. Is his hit streak still active? Did he keep it active with the homer?
Oh, he had a bomb
yesterday. There you go. It's nice to see that active still. But I'm excited to branch out. What I really want to see is other parts of this team that make me as excited and make fans as excited as does Kyle Lewis. And I'll include J.P. Crawford in there, too. Let's see what else stood out. Oh, that double play was great. Fantastic.
Yeah, defense.
Yeah. I think that's been really, really good.
Yeah. And one quick thing on Walker, you brought him up there. You know, the thing with Taijuan Walker has never been ability or stuff. I mean, he's got that. He always has. That's why he was scouted the way he was, and that's why there was so much hype behind him as he came up through the minor leagues. His issues are twofold: health and confidence. Health and confidence. When he gets base runners on, bad things happen. That's just kind of the way he's got to learn to fight through that. Hopefully that's kind of where, I mean, he's a veteran pitcher by now. He's been around for long enough, certainly. So
yeah,
if his head is on straight, then there's no reason. I'm not going to say he's going to throw a one hitter every night, but there's no reason to think he can't be an effective
pitcher.
That's
my expectation, Tom.
One hitter every night?
Or a no hitter. It's one of those two things. Those are your only choices, or you're out of here.
Here's the thing, Taijuan. You can do even better. We're thinking no hitters every
I'm thinking none. How do you feel about that? Like, new idea. What if you throw a no hitter every night? I mean, why hasn't anyone done this before? Curse me, that joke.
How about Vogie? Oh. Poor Vogie.
Poor Vogie?
Yeah, poor Vogie.
I'm sorry, guys. With Vogelback, he's one of those guys right now that just looks disinterested to me. Like, I watch him at the plate, and I hate saying that about a professional baseball player who's trying to make his mark on this league, but it seems like last year, at the beginning of the year, he got hot. He was everybody's favorite, you know, the reincarnation of Tommy Boy, and now he comes up to the plate here in 2020, and seriously, he just looks disinterested. He doesn't look like he has a serious approach to the plate in terms of at the beginning of the year last year. He was going deep into counts. He was, you know, being patient. I don't know. I'm not feeling Vogey right now. I hope he can turn it around, but I don't know. Just something about his body language is just really irking me, and I can't quite pinpoint it.
I know about the body language, but Jake, if you were the sports radio equivalent of what Vogelback is doing out there right now, 2-for-17, what would your body language be like? Would you be talking to anybody at the office?
Probably not. I probably wouldn't be talking to very much of anybody. But, hey, we're 2-for-17. It's the beginning of the year, Tom. Let's have a little bit of excitement. If I came out of the gate, the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show for the first 2 weeks and my body language was the way that his was, I mean, come on. Like, let's go. let's have some excitement here. It's the start of a season.
Can you imagine throwing to Jake for a segment and he's just, it's whatever. No, I don't really care about it.
Jake, what do you think about the Pac-12 players opting out?
It's whatever.
No.
It's good.
I don't know. Who cares?
No, it's not how I'm hardwired. So I have a hard time seeing other people, you know, just kind of having a different way of going about their business. It's I don't know. I hope things can turn around for Vogey, but the kid's got talent, and I think maybe that's why it comes in my frustration is that I he just isn't coming even close to what he looked like at the beginning of the year last year. And I think something's going on in terms of his feelings, in terms of his long-term future with the Mariners.
Tom, is there anything outside of starting pitching? I think we could all said the top of that rotation looks great. Is there anything else that stood out to you as improving even over just Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
No. Everything's equal. I mean, the defense didn't look as shaky chucking the ball. Look, it's not always about errors, and I know that they made them in that first series, but sometimes when the ball just keeps on rolling, you know, even if you don't allow extra runs to score, it just doesn't look good. That's what happened in the first series. I didn't see as much of that, and I expect that to keep on improving. But, like, look, when the starting pitching improves the way it did from the first series, mm-hmm. I mean, your team's going to look drastically better. You're not going to be slugging it out in 10-7 games every single night. I mean, like the one I watched last night with the Red Sox and the Yankees. I mean, that makes me feel a ton better. I have some faith in these guys. I really do. I have faith in Dunn and Sheffield for the future. I have faith in Gonzalez, Walker, and Graveman for right now to varying degrees, but I think that should sort itself out one way or the other. I mean, whether that keeps them at 500 for the rest of the year, that's okay. This team finishes 30-30. I think anybody's going to complain about that. I'm not.
I mean,
you are, Jake?
No, I'm not gonna complain about that. I'm not gonna complain, but
as long as the body language is good.
As long as the body language
is good,
as long as I, well, here's the thing,
guys. Imagine
if
he steps up to the plate and he smiles at the camera like this one's for Jake.
It's not
I'm
about
so
the smile,
excited
okay?
To be
it's
here.
It's not about the smile. It's about the effort, okay? If I feel like the player is giving best effort at the plate or running
swing
the bases or whatever it is, I feel like I can forgive that because, okay, maybe the athlete doesn't have it, right? Maybe he just doesn't have it. But when they have potential and you don't see them fully engaged, that's an entirely different issue. That's an entirely different issue.
Well, it's going to take some effort to get to 30-30. I don't think there's any doubt about that. We'll ask Mike Salk about his takeaways from the Mariners plus the Pac-12 thing. Are the players going about this the right way? 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Great to have Mike Salk with us on the old hotline there. Didn't exactly get the win-loss results we wanted, Mike, from the Mariners over the weekend, but some improvements, certainly with the pitching. What did you think of what you saw?
I really enjoyed watching them. I'm a surprising amount, and not that, you know, I'm always excited to watch baseball. I knew this wasn't going to be like an A-plus year and a year of contention for the Mariners, but I expected them to make more mistakes. I expected them to play more games of bad baseball. I expected the starting pitching to be worse than it's been. The bullpen's been about what I thought. But I think they've really been a blast, and they're playing with great energy, great spirit, great spunk. They don't give up in games. For the most part, they haven't just been giving up and rolling over in at bats. They've been scrappy. And when you hear Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais talk about what they want to be a team that's difficult to play against, that's uncomfortable to play against. And I think you've seen that. Yeah, the A's are a better team, and they beat them 2 out of 3, 2 very close games, by the way. But I thought in the last 2 series against both the Angels and the A's, they were hard to play against almost every night. And that's a great, great sign for where they're going in the future.
Salk, what did you see from the starting pitching at the top of the rotation this time around?
Well, I'll be honest. I didn't get a chance to see Kikuchi on Saturday, and I know he pitched much better, and I've been a little hard on him, so I'm sorry. I can't just come in and say he was great because I didn't get a chance to see Saturday. But, I mean, Taijuan Walker was dominant. That's the best I can remember him looking. I mean, he mm-hmm. seemed to have command of all of his pitches, and he's just filled out, you know? I mean, I remember the kid. When I think of him, I still think of the kind of skinny young kid that I remember right after he got drafted sitting in the dugout. And he's not that anymore. I mean, he's a big, powerful, intimidating dude when he's up on the mound. And I thought he really used that to all of his advantage in his last start. I was impressed with Kendall Graveman as well. A little bit more like what he was a few years ago before the Tommy John. So, look, again, I don't know that they're going to have enough starting pitching to carry them very far. But it's entirely possible that if the bullpen just isn't horrible, that they'll win their share of games. You know, they're not going to necessarily be in contention, but they should continue to be fun.
Did you see or get a chance to read the full article in the Players Tribune about the We Are United letter from the Pac-12 players?
Yeah, I mean, I've read through it and kind of have a little sense of what they're doing. Brock and I are, I'm sure, going to end up arguing about it tomorrow.
Well, what are you going to say about it?
I'll say what I always say, which is that I'm excited to see kids taking advantage of whatever leverage they have. And it may not be enough, but I just think at its core, the NCAA system is broken and it's unfair. Brock will tell you differently, and I'm sure he will tomorrow, and I respect his view on it. And obviously he played in it in a way that I did not. But I just think that the players are the product, and they don't get paid. And that, to me, isn't right. And I understand that the money may not work to give everybody a fair and large share and all that, but when you see the amount of money that comes into the college game through the network television deals, you see the amount of money going to the coaches, you see the amount of money going to the universities, it just feels as if so many people have their hands out making money off this deal, except for those that actually are making it work. And I know that the best of them end up making some good money in the pros, and that's good. I'm glad for them. They deserve it. I just don't think it's right, and I don't know that I ever will.
Do you have any issue with the players maybe using COVID as a smokescreen to get these other lists of demands?
Yeah, I don't like that. It's not. I think it's a little dirty pool. On the other hand, will it surprise me if we see the exact same kind of behavior from the universities and the leagues? No. So, you know, you're sort of fighting fire with fire, if I could quote the great James Hetfield, but I don't like it. I don't think it's an appropriate way to, they're two separate issues, and I would prefer to see them separated out.
Now, Salk, you talk about the financial aspect of this. In terms of the demands that they have 4 pillars in which they are demanding economic freedom and equity, end racial injustice in college sports and society, protect all sports, health and safety protections. Those are a lot of demands and a lot of big issues that these players are saying, hey, we want this resolved or else we're going to opt out. Do you think that that's realistic in terms of them, you know, going after all these big things? Are we going to see a lot of players opting out because they don't get these, you know, standards that they want to have met?
Yeah, let's kind of back up. It is a lot of demands, you're right. Do I think they all need to be met in full in order for this thing to continue forward? No. But I think making some meaningful progress and having an intent to engage in discussion is probably enough to bring everybody back and allow this thing to move forward as normal. So I think it's well constructed. I think that you have to have the piece about all of the sports in there, or else there's a really easy argument against what they're doing. Well, we can't pay you because then all the other sports will go away. Okay, well, we're going to include them in our fight. And we're going to include our health and safety because, you know, for years that's not been enough of a priority. And then we're going to include the racial equity stuff. So, yeah, it is a lot. You're right. And it's probably unrealistic that all of those demands could be met immediately. But I think asking for meaningful progress on all of them, yeah, I think it makes sense to tie them all to each other. I think they're all related.
Salk, with universities kind of being in an interesting situation here, given the players, do you think players should have their scholarship still on the table if they opt out in protest versus opting out due to COVID-19?
It's a good question, and you know, you probably need to look to the labor world in order for answers. I mean, if this is important to you enough that you are willing to say you're opting out, yeah, you're probably got to be willing to risk something, or else you're not making enough of a statement. So I think I can understand where the universities are coming from and why they would say, all right, if that's the case, you know, you're out of your scholarship. The players have to truly believe that this is that important. It will be very unfortunate if many of them lose that scholarship and the changes aren't made until a few years later. They will have been the martyrs for the case.
Do you think that an XFL or any kind of side startup league can work if its commissioner is somebody who has that league as a side project, whether it's Vince McMahon, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, whoever? I'm starting to think that if you're going to have that kind of league, you need somebody who's going to be focused on that and only that. What do you make of that?
I'm not convinced that any of those leagues can work, whether they're a side project or a full-time gig. I think at the end of the day, we've expanded the biggest professional sports leagues to such an extent that the talent at the edges is already marginal. And if you're looking for the next group of talented players after the ones that have already made the major leagues or the pros or whatever the top league is, I just don't think they're good enough to hold our attention. Oh, by the way, you know, cable and everything else has fractured the media, share of what we look at. And there's so many options available to us. It's hard, I think, for any of these leagues to gain enough of a foothold. We saw it with the XFL. Yeah, there was some interest right off the bat. And after a week or two, and once people got a chance to see the product and realized that the quarterbacks couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, there wasn't a ton of continued interest in watching the XFL. And, you know, I watched. I went into it with an open mind. And after watching the quarterbacks play, like a lot of people, I said, I'm out. There aren't enough to have, you know, 100 quarterbacks. If there's two or three per team, there aren't even 60 good enough quarterbacks to actually watch on a weekly basis. So I just don't believe that any of these leagues are ever going to truly be successful, no matter what.
I think I agree with you, Mike. Can you give me a little of your best Hetfield fight fire with fire?
No way. Nobody can growl quite like James. And if I do it, then I won't be able to talk for the rest of the day because it ends up frying my vocal cord.
That's true. That song of all songs would be impossible. All right, man. Thanks. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you guys.
All right. Pete Carroll is coming up next, not on this show, but he's going to be doing his Zoom conference, which we will carry for you, 710 ESPN Seattle.